right, welcome to another episode of the Streaking the Lawn podcast. Once again, my name is Pierce, and I've got some usual characters with me tonight. Caroline, how's it going?
Hey.
Hey.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. It's been a little bit. Did you have a lovely New Year?
I was sick, so.
Yay.
It was not. I won't complain. I got sleep. My parents had the dog. I did a lot of sleeping. I did a lot of sports watching. So honestly.
And Hallmark Channel movie watching.
Of course. Yeah, not my worst New Year's, I will say. Despite being on the date well, I think I needed the downtime.
All right.
I didn't have to leave my apartment, so there you go.
And joining us this evening, we've got fellow Streaking the Lawner, Matt Trogdon. Hello, Matt.
Hey, gang. What's going on? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. How was your New Year's Eve?
My New Year's Eve and New Year's Day were lovely. Very low-key. No complaint.
Watch some football?
A little bit, yeah.
How about that college football semifinal?
Woo!
Dogs.
Sure.
I don't care. I don't. Those running backs were fun to watch, though.
Yeah. Shout out my cousin Aaron, who is a Georgia grad, so I guess I will be rooting for Georgia.
Shout out to Aaron. I watched a lot of bowl games this year. A lot of bowl games, more than I tend to over the amount of the bowl season, which is like 11 weeks longer. There are a lot of really good ones, though, that I enjoyed watching. One that I did not enjoy watching was the Northrop Grumman Military Bowl. One of the worst football games I've ever seen. I did watch it, and I did not attend it, but you two did. So I'm just going to kick it to you guys who got to go to Annapolis in person and witness that. How was that, Caroline?
I will say I spent the entire week, a bowl week, with volunteer. I used to intern at the Military Bowl. I was down there. I was helping out with social media. So the bowl week was fun. The players got a lot out of it. They seemed to enjoy themselves. It's a lovely group of players. I enjoyed meeting
lovely
them
dudes. Staff.
It looked like they really took advantage of the trips that they had to the National Monuments and the African American History Museum. Like, it was really cool. The new AD, Carla Williams, was there. Very cool to see her, get some time with her. And nice. I got to watch the first quarter and a half-ish I spent on the sidelines. So the first, seeing the team come out, that was very exciting.
Oh, nice to know you.
We returned a kickoff for a touchdown. That was very fun. And then I was freezing and I went home. So
and nothing else happened.
So.
All in
all. No, obviously that sucked. Like, the game sucked. The weather was so brutally cold. I actually caught on fire standing too close to a station. Not kidding.
Yeah.
A little fireball attached to me, thanks to my friend Chris McDonald for putting it out and saving my best and possibly also my life. So some of the things I thought were really good. I'll start there because the list is shorter. The fans, Matthew here with us wrote a lovely piece saying the fans showed up, the team did not. I could not agree with that more.
Truth.
Part of it being this is why we thought the Military Bowl was such a good fit for this team this year, that sort of thing. The UVA side was packed, so much orange and blue. The tailgates were awesome. The enthusiasm level was very high. So that was really, really cool to see. I don't think this was something where like the team was disinterested or didn't care, or I don't even know, like, I won't go as far, like, I can't claim to say about how well prepared or whatever. I think a huge thing was the weather, and I'm not making excuses. So if you have a team that throws the ball a lot, obviously it's hard to, clearly some of those passes and catches we've seen made throughout the course of the season. We know that they're capable of doing it. So it's not like all of a sudden, Kurt forgot to throw a football. But
if you've got to watch the Virginia Tech game, it's not just okay. Continue.
I'm sorry. Whatever. I have decided, like, yeah, everything else that could have gone wrong went wrong. Like, it sucked. Like, it was the whole thing. Just fart noises is my summation of the game. But I will say, my takeaway, I still think it was a successful season. It is a crappy blemish upon which to finish a season that is far ahead of schedule where I thought they would be. Mm-hmm. They won three times as many games as they did the year before. They showed they were capable of hanging with some of the big dogs, whether or not they were able to finish off those games, whether it's Miami. And yeah, the loss to Tech is frustrating and annoying and terrible and whatever other stuff. And it's, but I will say again, like from spending some time with talking to some of the coaches and stuff like that, it's just the message is still, not after the game, this was all before, but
when they were happy.
Yeah, I still think that this is the staff. Like, I think that these are the guys. I think that this is a stepping stone. And this is the type of weather and the type of game that like really fits what Navy was trying to do. So, and they did it very well. Navy played very well.
Yes. Yeah, they rushed for 452 yards, which came out to 5.9 yards a rush. Virginia, on the other hand, 30 yards rushing. Is 1.7 per attempt, so stark difference there. I mean, the stats, you could go on and on with how...
Yeah, any stat you throw out, it's going to be...
It doesn't really ever get much worse other than the kickoff return, which was fun and exciting.
Oh, we scored touchdown Clemson, didn't
we? You imagine that doesn't happen, like he takes a knee in the end zone or something, and like... Then we're talking about a 0 out of 100 on a scale of what you could do in a football game for the Hoosiers.
They were really excited after that, though.
Completely. Yeah, but
the feel was real good on the sidelines.
What a shame to have the culmination of a successful season in terms of expectations. That had some good highs. Mm-hmm. Boise State probably being the highest, but certainly getting bowl eligibility.
Georgia Tech was
another top one. Beating Carolina and Duke is wonderful, and so there are a lot of things to look at, and we can get to outlook down the road stuff in a second. But none of the feelies can make up for the disaster performance, and the weather can't explain it. The strategy of both teams can't explain it. There's nothing that can explain it other than they completely crap the bed, you know, or whatever. Like, they didn't execute, they weren't prepared, and they did everything F level, you know, if we're scoring it. There's just no other way to wrap it.
I don't like to talk about preparation because I don't know. Execution, sure. I don't know how much is... I wasn't in any of the preparation.
Even the coaches said they didn't prepare well.
Okay, that's one of those, like, I don't claim to know.
It's like an easy, if you did, then it wouldn't have been that bad. You know, like, if you put in that effort, you clearly were missing something because the scheme didn't work. Nothing worked, you know. Well, anyway, Matt, you were there. Why don't we get some of your thoughts?
I was there. it was probably the coldest I've ever been in my life for an extended period of time. But also, it was a fun day we got there Wednesday night. It was a fun bowl experience, really, up until Navy got the ball in the first quarter. I echo what Caroline said about the turnout from Virginia fans. I thought that was great. It's so clear that there is a good base of Virginia fans just hoping and waiting for some good football to be played, which is why I think it's so unfortunate just how badly things went. To get to your point, Pierce, I mean, it's 49-7. Is that what it was, right? 49-7 is there's no way to excuse that. I mean, and I don't want to sell Navy short. I mean, Navy was finished the season 7-6. You know, most of their losses looks like, you know, they lost to Central Florida, they lost to Notre Dame, they lost to Army by a point. You know, so this was a good Navy team, and I know it was on their home field, and I know it was a cold, but I just don't know how you go out there and lose 49-7. And how you go out there and look as lost comprehensively as Virginia looked after the kickoff return. You know, the defense looked like they had never seen the option before. The offense looked like it had – the offense didn't look like it had any idea what it wanted to do.
Yeah.
And once it became clear – you know, that they were struggling. I didn't see any adjustments from the offense to try out anything different. It was the same old Robert and I, let's throw it out to the receivers down the field, you know, offense that we've seen all year. And so, yeah. I don't know, man. It was hard. It's hard not to go to that game and walk away from it and be pretty upset about how it ended, especially given, you know, it was Micah Kizer's last game, Quinn Blanding's last game, Kurt Benkert's last game. Those guys have been important as far as re-injecting some life back into this program, and for them to go out like that is sad.
Yeah, I think one not excuse, but one easy explanation for it is something that we touched on all season and everybody did, which is the lack of numbers and quality on the lines, particularly the offensive line. And Benkert was doing what he was doing all year, which was running for his life, you know, a lot. And the running game couldn't get any traction, even with some guys who can run the ball when they're not fumbling it. You know, it's hard to go up against a good team and be successful. Though we saw the Hoos be more successful, even though they didn't win a lot of games against good teams. They won some games against good teams, and they played well against some stronger teams than Navy. You know, Virginia Tech, we haven't podcasted about it. Obviously, the offense was frustrating, but the defense played great, and it was a close game against a much, much better team than the Navy. I would say Miami falls into that category, too. That is a better team that UVA showed they could compete against. And this game, they didn't show they could compete with a mid-level American Conference team, you know. Say what you will about them executing flawlessly and playing a great game, which they did, but they went 4-4 in the American. So this isn't one of the top tier teams they played this year, and they fell flat on their face. But you know, I think there's a ton of reasons for optimism as well. And what else can you do but move on and address the issues that we know are there. I don't think anybody's calling it as like some condemnation for the coaching staff, although maybe, you know, offensive coordinator tends to be a unpopular person on the internet with good reason.
I legitimately don't get like,
you don't get the frustration.
No, I get frustration, but like, this is like year two. I don't know. I just think everyone becomes an expert and I get really frustrated. So I get more frustrated with like that reaction than I do with the actual play calls. I don't know. The people who are demanding runner. The like hashtag fire an eye after mm-hmm. two seasons with like people that they inherited from the bad planning of Mike London is, uh-huh. And again, I do understand there's some portion of like, you need to adjust to the pieces you have, but they also need to start implementing a system. So they can't continue to play the game that Mike London is like left for them.
Sure.
They have to also initiate stuff. And I do want to say there was some confusion on Twitter after the game based on a tweet from like that said he was like blowing off the media and like all this stuff. And
yeah, right.
It was
right.
Such bullshit because he right. wasn't. He didn't like the way the Bull set it up, and he was actually apologizing to media for not being able to talk to them because right. the SID set stuff up. So that kind of stuff like infuriates me, and I don't like when stuff gets picked up like that and then latched onto and like, look at him, see, he's an asshole, he can't even take credit for, and he has taken credit for, and people say yeah. from the BYU days that like he can be a little like gruff and blame the players, and I don't like that sort of thing either, but good Lord, we don't need any hashtag fire so-and-so. Who's gonna want to come play for whatever? I just like, yeah,
well, I'll say this, I think the issue with the offense, and I think the issue with the offensive coordinator, I think there's two of them. Number one, I think you saw him go away from some things throughout the course of the season that he had success with, right? So, yeah. I mean, that Duke game, that North Carolina game, where you saw Jordan Ellis really kind of carry the load, and then we come out against Boston College and Pitt, and for the rest of the season, Jordan Ellis doesn't touch the ball that much.
Right.
And, you know, it seems like, you know, Virginia's offense, when it was doing well, was mixing in some plays over the middle, and when it was not doing well, it was doing everything to the outside. And I think, for whatever reason, he went hot and he went cold. And when you have as thin of a margin of error as Virginia has you know, I think that's an easy thing to pick up on.
And I'd agree with that. And I think part of it with the two of the games you mentioned was the Pitt and BC games where they got blown out quickly, fast, was a little bit of the, we didn't do it early and then couldn't do it late because it was already, you know, a 2 or 3 scored hole. And so they relied on the arm and then things just spiral out of control. I do agree with, like, I'm not saying that anyone's above criticism by any means. I know people say, like, oh, you're such a homer, you're allowed to criticize Tony Bennett, you're allowed to criticize. I just think calling for someone's firing after 2 seasons is a little bit aggressive, but that's just...
Sure, but let's talk outlook, you know...
Sorry, Matt, I cut off your second point, sorry.
The margin for error hopefully gets a little friendlier down the road as they start to build a roster of the type of players that they want, whether it be more linemen who are capable or a quarterback with more mobility who's coming in, Bryce Perkins, or Brennan Armstrong. You know, what's your feelings towards next year?
I'm really unsure at the moment. I've been thinking about this a lot since the game ended, and the best analogy I can come up with is that of an airplane. I think last season, I think this team, the airplane was stuck at the gate. I think this season, the airplane got on the runway, and it looked like the airplane was going down the runway, and I think it's still going down the runway, but I can't tell if it's gaining speed or if it is losing speed. And so I know that the airplane is definitely not in the air yet.
Yeah.
I can't tell if it's and it's certainly closer to takeoff than it was at this point last year. But is it going to be closer to takeoff next year than it is at this point this year? I'm not sure yet. You know, you lose a lot of talented guys in the off, you know, to graduation. You are bringing in a recruiting class that has some nice balance and some nice pieces to it. So I think, you know, you just hopefully have one of those off seasons where you don't lose too many players to attrition, and hopefully bringing in the quarterback, bringing in the different types of quarterback, the more dual threat guys, will be the key that unlocks Robert and I's, Dr. Robert and I's offensive genius.
All right.
Because if it doesn't, then I think maybe some of those people that Caroline gets mad at might have more of a point.
Then fire up your hashtags, folks.
Yeah, I'll say that. But yeah, I think you get a quarterback in there that runs the offense that you are more comfortable running, and hopefully that helps you do some things. And then hopefully on defense you can figure out a way to replace the guys that you've lost. You know, Jordan Mack, probably Chris Peace, probably those are going to be your leaders. The secondary should be just as good as it was this past year, even though we lost Quinn Blanding. The defensive line is going to be a little bit interesting and shaky, I think, but we'll see what happens there. But the offense, yeah, we'll see. That's the tale for 2018, you know, in my opinion.
Yep.
Darn. I'm most concerned about losing – well, Micah, Andre Livroni, and Kurt are probably my top three where I'm like, oh, no. But I'm very, very excited about Bryce Perkins. I think he's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I have heard that some of the defensive coaches are not excited about playing against him in spring ball, but that they will be excited to watch him play. Like, that's one of those things, like, he's going to be fun. And I completely agree when it comes to Jordan Mack has been one of my favorite players to watch this year. Juan Thornhill has been a ton of fun to watch this year. Oz coming back, Olamide Zaccheaus is a huge, huge piece. So I think there's definitely some pieces to be excited about. And as Matt said, the recruiting class is a solid foundation class. People will complain that it's just 3 stars, but my response would be, I guess, yes, it's all 3 stars. So there's nothing lower than a 3, and they're all relatively high 3s. If I remember correctly, they're 81, rated 81 or higher. So it's a very...
It's rankings-wise one of the worst in the conference. So, it, you know, it, like, it, I think rankings, for the most part, we yeah. can out the window anyway. So that's not to say we shouldn't be optimistic with it, but it's not.
I'm saying it's a foundational class. There are no highs and there are no lows. Like, they're not pulling in any like one or two stars to fill a spot. There's plans.
You got good. It's a class with a lot of balance to it. I mean, you got four or five offensive linemen. You got four linebackers, four receivers. You need maybe another defensive lineman, another defensive back, but otherwise, and a running back. I guess we don't have a running back committed. We have the kid that went on his Mormon mission that should be enrolling in the fall, but. You know, not that we even use a running back all that much in our offense anyway, so maybe that's why we don't recruit any. But otherwise, it's a class with a...
Well, yeah, next year should be telling, I think, to try and keep the, you know, 6-win momentum. But we have all offseason to break that down. So why don't we switch gears to basketball.
Woo!
Woo! Yeah, basketball! Who's are up to number 8 in a poll today?
Number 8.
Top 10 in all the polls, probably, for Virginia basketball. Only one loss in the out-of-conference, which most people probably would have said is best-case scenario, realistically, with that out-of-conference slate. You know, if West Virginia is going to shoot pullback, you know, step-back threes with a hand in their face for most of the game, what are you going to do? But like, that was not a discouraging loss whatsoever. Some more recent play has probably been discouraging in the way that, you know, you've got better teams coming down the road. So you're like, ooh, well, you know, we got to shore this up. And you saw some of that against BC, you know, the idea that you needed people to help out in the scoring because there are going to be slumps from the guys they were relying on. And BC is not a bad team. I mean, they beat Duke. Obviously, they have some guards that shoot the lights out, and they did against Virginia. But you saw a guy who wasn't scoring step up to fill that scoring hole. I'm referring to Ty Jerome, obviously, coming out of – he had a stretch there where he wasn't doing so hot, and now recently has found his shooting stroke again. Maybe it speaks to conditioning. He was sick, hurt over the offseason. Who knows? Players – come out, and he certainly plays with a lot of onions, as Raftery would say. He's not afraid to shoot even when he's slumping, and Virginia was better for it to escape their conference opener with the win against Boston College. But conversely, Devin Hall went on a total cold streak for the game. So the Hoos, I think, going into conference play, my main point would be they're in great shape. They look better in a lot of ways than I think we were expecting, but they need to continue to find like three scorers and not one or two depending on the game in order to really succeed in the ACC, because the ACC is loaded. A lot of these teams in the mid-range, I think, look better than they have in the past few years. So that's a lot of info I just rattled off. Why don't we just, you guys chime in with your initial impressions following the out-of-conference, and then, of course, the conference opener. Matt, do you want to go first, since I let Caroline talk first about football?
Yeah, sure. All right. I'll try to keep mine shorter than she did.
Oh, it's on.
I'm kidding.
It's like first take over here.
Yeah.
I don't want to be Stephen A.
You are. This is a fun team to watch, man, and that they're definitely different than they were last year. They are, you know, it's just a different. The scoring is coming from all different places, even though it's not consistently coming every night from every guy. But so they're fun. They're fun to watch. It's great to see Isaiah Wilkins back and healthy and doing all of the things that Isaiah Wilkins does. It's been great, you know, it's been great to watch Kyle, and it was great to watch Ty Jerome on Saturday, and then obviously Devin Hall. But the BC game, I really thought Virginia was going to end up losing that one. That one kind of felt to me like the Florida State game last year, or the Duke game in 2015, whatever it was, when you just have two quick guards just lighting up threes against that pack line down the stretch. And so I was glad that Virginia got out of there with a win. You know, I think if you're going to beat Virginia, that's kind of how you have to do it. You have to hit shots from beyond the arc and from long distance. That's what we saw with West Virginia too. So I think it was fortunate that Virginia got out of there. I'm optimistic about the ACC season. I'm really happy to see, Ty Jerome with his performance on Saturday. I think that has to make Virginia fans excited and comfortable and confident, not only for the rest of this season, but for, you know, for the next couple of years. It's pretty clear, you know, whose team this is going to be next season and the year after that. It's the two guys in the backcourt. So I was excited to see that happen on Saturday, and I look forward to seeing how they do this week against some of their rivals. So,
I think the non-conference was just about what I expected. They held, if I just did that, I just counted, and of course I lost it. I think 6 of the 12 teams under at or under 55 points. No one scored more than 67, and that was that VCU game. I think this is going to be a hot take. I've told some people this before, but
ready for
I think
it.
This team defense is the best we've seen in the last few years. Hold on, everyone.
It's a vague hot take. That's a medium take.
Okay, since Virginia's gotten like good again. So the ACC tournament.
The Tony Bennett era?
Let's say the Tony Bennett era. I was going to say
since like the first year or something.
Okay. Yeah, in the Tony Bennett era, let's say that. And here's why. I don't think there's a single defender who is as good as Malcolm Brogdon was. Like man on man, like you choose one. If I can pick one guy in the last Tony Bennett era, like I'm going to still take Malcolm. But I think there are there isn't really a weak point with the team defense. I think that it's stronger all the way around. Like I love Anthony Gill, but he wasn't as good a defender as Isaiah. Like, like Mike Toby, but he was not a good defender as Jack Salt. So Jack Salt, for his complaints people have on the offensive end, he is a very good defender. And I think this team defense has looked better at, like, I think they have the potential to be better than, I guess that's a better way to say it.
Yeah.
Any of the team defenses in the Tony Bennett era, because I think Nigel Johnson coming off the bench is a fantastic defender. Mamadou Diakite is obviously a good, like, chase down, like, he's those blocks he can get. And I think Dre Hunter is a fantastic defender for his first year playing full speed. Obviously, I'd like to see more of him against ACC competition before making, but there were definitely some plays against some of the better, like, I think it was the Wisconsin game he played pretty well. They all blend together, but
they play pretty well in all of them.
Yeah, and when Ty gets a lot of flack for looking unathletic, I've heard that a lot. I think it's just because he's so big. Like he's 6'5". I don't think we're used to like point guards being that big, but he did actually a pretty good job, I think, on whatever day that was, Saturday.
Yeah, I think that
in front of some of the quick BC guards.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. The quick guards, like Matt said, is what gives Virginia trouble usually. And not just the hitting three-pointers. That's a must-do. But it's because they're getting in the lane and collapses the defense a little bit too much, which opens up those three-pointers. Without the ability to get in the lane, usually those hot shooting teams don't shoot so well against us. And I'm not sure that the guards line up. I'm just trying to think of you know, the past years of Joe Malcolm on the floor at the same time, Justin on the wing.
I definitely think
so. A strong defensive group though, regardless.
Yeah. And I think the ones that have like, you're right, like the ones that have like the Justin Malcolm group in there, like that's tough to be. But I think that I have a lot of fun watching this team on defense. Offensively, I actually really like what they're bringing to the table this year. I think that it's very different from last year. I think that you see much more getting the ball inside. You see much more movement. You see much more cutting. And I think that they've, other than against BC, which, and I don't know how to take with that, because when the subs came in, things really fell apart. And that was really the first game that happened. Like, they really fell apart. And in that, I don't know what, I haven't had a chance to crack and watch it. Like, I don't really remember.
It was
like,
weird. It was like, because Wilkins isn't out there, we just don't know how to do anything. You know,
it hasn't been that dramatic the rest of the season. Like, they've done perfect, like, very well bringing in the subs. And and I think hopefully that's the one. Obviously, we can't go the rest of the season like that. Like, that can't be where you get that much production of it. And I'm not too concerned about the Devin Hall slump. I think he'll fix it. Like, he'll get his way out. The bigger concern I had was him missing that free throw, because that's just very out of character. Like, I think it was just one of those.
Yeah, he missed.
I mean, I'm talking about the big one.
He's a 94-some percent free throw.
He's only missed, like, four on the season, and two of them were in that game, I think. But I think looking
at... So he's a 33% free throw shooter in ACC play this year. That's worrisome.
I know. It'll be... This first stretch is actually pretty tough.
Yep.
But for then sure. I'm going to say ACC, so it's all going to be pretty tough. I think right now what's comforting is, one, Isaiah Wilkins, because I legitimately don't even have enough good words to say about Isaiah Wilkins when it comes to his style and hustle and heart and, I mean, all the cliche words you want to say. Like, everyone calls him a glue guy, but I think that just undersells him.
It would have been hard to imagine realistically any better of a performance, you know, when you're talking about what's he going to come out and look like as a senior compared to a very strong player for Virginia and what Virginia wants out of him in junior. And maybe shoot, you know, but he's hitting some shots. He's never going to be Mike Scott, you know,
he's shooting 58% from the field.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of those are jump shots, you know, so, even that, I mean, I can't imagine a better, you know, if we're grading, he's getting an A+.
Yes, 100%.
Expectations from him.
His free throw shooting has drastically improved. Well, I think he was in like the 74s and he's at 80% right now, but he's only taken 25. So he's averaging 7.3 points and 7.5 rebounds per game. And that's not really like the score. I mean, we need the scoring to be more his thing, but like if I had been able to say, if someone told me like he's averaging 7 points a game right now, I'd be like, well, I'll take it. even with the 31 points, like Ty is still just under 10 points per game, but there's just something about watching him play. Like, it's unlike any other. I watched the Wake Carolina game the other day and I mean, you know me. We joke about like effort and.
Darn, you love effort.
I love effort. I don't like to presume.
You love it. You love it.
People's effort or energy.
You love energy.
It's almost like two different types of games to see how Isaiah approaches the game, and he came out of nowhere for that block that basically saved the game.
Huge play.
And then he tried to dive to get it. He swatted that thing into the band and then tried to dive to get it.
I have a semi-hot take if we're going to be giving out semi-hot takes.
Yeah, we are.
I think that Jack Aloysius Salt should get the ball more often in the low post than he does right now.
Me too.
I think
I can't support that.
I think he has developed just serviceable enough of a post game in order for people to keep their eye on him. He's not Anthony Gill. He's not even, I don't know, he's not even Akil Mitchell, but he's just serviceable enough now, I think. If he catches the ball, he's just serviceable enough.
Well, that's an if right there.
I think that you got to guard him.
Assuming he catches the ball, something he doesn't do with like amazing consistency.
I think they do a disservice by looking him off as much as they do.
He's a good passer too, or good enough.
I agree that
he should get touches. I don't think that.
He needs a few touches.
They shouldn't be like drawing up plays that he's going to be the scoring option or anything. But yeah, get him a touch, and if no one's guarding him, he knows how to turn around and dunk. Finally,
I remember growing up watching the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls, and if you have watched them play. In the first quarter of every game.
What inane comparison are you about to make?
First quarter of every game, they would give three or four touches inside to Bill Cartwright. And Bill Cartwright would convert every single one of them. And it looked like Bill Cartwright was going to go for 20 every night. And then that was it. They never got
it. And the teams were like, hey, lay off Pippen and Jordan.
Just give Salt the ball maybe a handful of times in the first half. Let him see what he can do and establish himself. And if it doesn't work, I mean, you still have enough time.
Usually, if it doesn't work, the fans still hate him already. So yeah. What are you going to lose?
Give him the ball. Just a little bit more. Just a little bit more.
I approve this lukewarm pick, for sure.
The other hot take I have, I don't know if it's a hot take or not, but my problem on – so I sat there Saturday wondering why Virginia was in jeopardy of losing the game, and I went back and looked at the stats to wonder why Virginia was – you know, in such jeopardy to lose the game. You know, because they shot the ball not great. I mean, they did everything else great. They just shot the ball poorly. But from my view, and my seats are way up there, okay? I'm not like Brian Lee Young. I don't have that kind of that kind of stroke. My seats are way up there. But it seemed like for a while there, the blocker mover offense turned into the standing and looking around offense.
100%.
And you just can't do that in basketball against a man-to-man defense. You can't just stand there when your offense is predicated on not standing there. When your offense is predicated on people going and setting picks for other people, mm-hmm. you can't just stand there. You have to go do that type of thing.
Was Jack on the bench for this? Because he's our prime pick setter. So
I don't know who was – I don't know. He played most of the game.
Jack played most of the game, yeah.
No, he did.
Because so he had to.
Probably guilty of it at some point.
He had no fouls, by the way.
That is astonishing. I did not know that. No, he had a great game, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I also did not like the turnovers. There were too many.
There were a few plays where you thought Tony Bennett was going to go, and you all demand that I let them run more, and you see what happened.
This is why we don't run.
Fast break plays. Kyle was getting a little unlucky. Kyle was putting it off the backboard, and it was like rolling off the back of the rim and out, you know.
Yeah.
So
there were at least two, maybe three or four that I don't know what people are like, and he can't finish a layup. I'm like, obviously he can finish a layup. Like sometimes it's like, it's just unlucky. Two, definitely. He probably had one or two more that I don't remember off the top of my head that just like were in and then came out. So
there were a few that are questionable. Chuck it up, but a lot.
So, here's the thing: he does that, and every time now that he shoots it, I'm like going in.
There was a sequence. I think Virginia in the last 5 minutes. There was a sequence when I think Ty hit two threes to put Virginia up six, and then Kai went down and had a great drive, and the ball just popped out right at the end. And then BC came down and within 30 seconds to tie the game. I mean, they were that close from being up eight.
Yeah.
30 seconds later, it was tied. So yeah, I mean, some of those are going to go in.
Yeah.
Or if he just dumped it off to Jack Salt for a dunk, probably were up eight there.
But there was
if he catches it, he's got to catch
them. Dumped it off. Ty had one where he had a straight lane to the rim from the side, from more the baseline than down the lane.
Yeah.
And he had the full view, dumped it off to Jack, who booted it out of bounds. So I mean, you know, like it's tough to there's examples on both sides.
I think that's
up to the guards though. They got to know when to dump it off to when Jack's ready and when Jack not ready. Obviously, but
I always think Jack, be ready, man. You always got to want to run.
Jack's more ready.
You're setting screens. Be ready for the rock.
That's right.
Cartwright knows that.
go back and watch the tape, man. Bill Cartwright had that little 6'8" jump shot.
Yeah, the Jeromes in that game, though, and that's one of the things. Like, I do think the trio that Boston College has, when people try and say like, there were definitely things Virginia could have done better, like the turnovers and the shooting percentage was a little low. However, what happened was, there were some of those shots, like honestly, I think Kyle has the worst luck sometimes with like actually playing good defense, and the dude will hit a shot over his outstretched hand in the guy's face where he's like in the right position. Yeah. Like he did everything he could, and the guy's fading away and hits a three, and I'm like, I don't know what you do.
Yeah, they were making.
But I think if by limiting Kai Bowman to 5 points is one of the best defensive jobs this team has put on someone, and it was very impressive. That's what Devin did to Kai Bowman was Malcolm Brogdon-esque, like holding their guy who's coming in. Because the double-headed monster for them isn't Chatham, Chapman, and Robinson. It's Robinson and Bowman.
Right.
And Bowman had no points in the first half. He was like 0 for 6, and he didn't hit his first three-pointer until like 8 minutes left in the game. Mm-hmm. Like, where Devin struggled offensively, he more than made up for in my mind defensively. And again, maybe I'm too Tony Bennett out, but
more than made up for is a little strong. I think that we needed.
Well, here's the thing: if he hadn't, imagine if he lets him get one more bucket, we lose.
Yeah, but if Devin had scored, I don't know, two or made that free throw, then we win. You know, without it,
we would have had a 4-point lead, and it wouldn't have mattered.
No one out there would ever think I'm nothing but a huge Devin Hall fan. I'm just
it's just like how much, like, honestly, I thought when they got the second chance, that was it. I thought we were toast. Yeah,
that was ridiculous.
Like 100% thought we were toast. Like, it was like the Dwayne Bacon. Like,
the push on Kyle right before that, not immediately, but it was. Less than a minute left, or right around that.
It was
such an awful call that I didn't react. I was paralyzed by how inexplicably terrible someone who gets paid to ref games could watch a Boston College player shove Kyle Guy and then blow the whistle and go, "You shoved him." Like, they didn't even call blocking, which would have been a terrible. Yeah, call any, but they called shit. Like, he made this signal, and you know, I've seen NFL refs call a face mask on a Lions player, of course, whose face mask was getting grabbed. You know, YouTube it. I mean, it was like he knew what the foul was, and then just pointed the wrong direction and went with it. It was like, oh no, it wasn't.
Was that worse, or the second and or the third and fourth calls on Isaiah? That was some.
Those were bad.
That was some Mike Scott versus UNC type bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, like the first one of those being the, like, he slapped the ball out. You know, that it was a bad call. It was all ball, but he did make a violent.
It looks worse. The worst one to me was
shitty refs are going to go, oh, that might be a foul. He was so violent in his swing. He probably hit him. Yeah, it's a terrible call.
He got shoved into the Boston.
Oh, that was horrendous.
And then rolled into the BC. Yeah. Guy,
and then gotten called for the penalty or the foul. I was like, I don't even know what to do with this.
Yeah. Like, to answer your question, neither of those is as bad as the Kyle Guy foul in my mind. But
well, the timing of it was also terrible.
Yeah.
Like, you know, got two free throws for that bullshit.
I was not at the infamous Mike Scott versus UNC game. But I can't compare it to that one, but I would say this game, that was the angriest and like the most instances of fans getting angry at referees that I think I've ever witnessed.
Up there for sure.
Yeah.
Right. It
was up there.
Yeah.
Top two or three.
I mean, just the quantity of the bad of the calls that people got upset about, and you know, and the force with which people were upset. I mean, that was, I've never seen anything like that.
I would think
except when people are booing Robert and I in Scott Stadium and
or Navy Marine Corps Stadium. Sure.
That's right.
Let's do a quick look around the ACC, just because I think a lot has changed since we were previewing the season. You know, Duke being 1-1 because Boston College is pretty decent, also sitting at 1-1. You've got Syracuse 12-2, UNC 12-2, Notre Dame 11-3, and the Miami, Virginia, and Clemson all 12-1 overall. And Clemson looks, dare I say, legit.
Yeah.
Miami, legit. Notre Dame, Bonzi Coleman, it just came out. He's hurt.
Yeah, broke his foot. He's out
for 2 months. So that's going to
really?
He'll be back just in time for our senior.
Yeah, just in time to talk shit to Tony Bennett again like he did in Brooklyn. So, yeah, Bonzi Coleman can go to hell, but that sucks for Notre Dame.
Bonzi Coleman.
Whatever. I hate
Bonzi Coleman Pierce.
I don't care. Dummy Mick talk shit to Tony Bennett.
That's true. He was kind of a jerk.
Anyway. Louisville doesn't look that bad for you know, the disaster that's going on. Louisville doesn't look good, but they don't look like Georgia Tech.
They lost Kentucky by 30.
Hot take: Kentucky's not that good.
No, Kentucky's not like a top five, top 10 team.
You know, I watched a little bit of that Louisville Kentucky game, and it just looked so different than Virginia games that I watch. It just looked so much more like a glorified AAU game.
Yeah, not it was really, sloppy.
Not really. Yeah, like it was very different. I don't know. I don't really even know.
FSU might be, but when all's said and done, they could easily challenge for a top four ACC seed for sure. They've lost to Duke in the final minute or so. They have a 1-point loss to the Cowboys, Okie State, but they've beat Florida by a billion. You know, the FSU, in classic FSU fashion, we're not quite sure they're going to win the big games. And we'll say Florida counts as a big game. Duke counts as a big game. They're 1-1 right now in big games. They look like a legit contender. So that's right there. That's Miami. That's Duke, obviously. UNC, jury's still out, but you got to give it to them. I would say still contender status. Virginia, potentially the Hokies, potentially Clemson. That's potentially Syracuse. That's a lot of teams.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed, this was part of, like, the best part about being sick over New Year's. There's so much good sports on, and I had no guilt, just, like, sitting on the sofa under a blanket watching all of the basketball and all of the football. The Wake Forest, like I said, Wake Forest-UNC was a very interesting game. UNC has some, like, really talented players, but there's times where they just, like we said with Virginia, just, like, kind of looks lost. Like, there was stuff where it was like, what are you doing?
Duke, like, when they let
Duke doesn't play defense right now. And what's terrifying to me is this reminds me of 2015 Duke, because they just have a ton of talent. That Marvin Bagley is tough. He's so good.
He's an absolute monster. He's better than anyone they've had.
Yeah, I mean, he scares me more than, like, Jahlil Okafor did, or Jabari Parker, like any of those guys.
Wait till Jack Salt gets his mitts on him, though, man.
Here's the thing. I don't know if you guys listen to it.
Wait till the big Kiwi puts his mitts on
him. But if he gets in a tough double team with Jack and Isaiah, like, he's gonna have a little bit.
True. They need to do that.
They have to double. That's what BC did. And if anyone listens to Titus and Tate podcast, like Tate,
they've been saying that for
talking about, like, just double him. And then BC did it and it worked. We'll get to talking about Tech more, but Virginia Tech came into the Syracuse game scoring over 93 points per game, right? Mm-hmm. And they had 19 and a half against Syracuse. They really struggled with the zone. And I think that just means they
Caroline thinks that we should play zone.
That's what I think. They hadn't seen anybody play any sort of defense on them.
Yeah,
they struggle against zone teams.
You don't think Carolina A&T?
I don't think Carolina
the lockdown shutdown defense.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting.
They've played some terrible teams.
Yeah, they've played some bad teams. And that's the same thing with, like, where Florida State is kind of that question mark. Because Florida State's, like, super athletic, just like they always are. They've got really long guys that are interchangeable, that are all 6'7", with, like, the longest arms you've ever seen.
They got long length.
Long length, lots of length. And other than the center,
long length out there.
Switch them out any position. So that's one of those. But, yeah, this stretch will be very interesting for Virginia with.
Virginia Tech has an interesting
Carolina, Syracuse.
An interesting weakness for the amount of shots that they take and let other teams take when you're scoring games against the Citadel 132 to 93. You've just given up 93 points to the Citadel.
That's the thing.
Their rebounding is no bueno.
It's awful. And they turn the ball over a lot, too.
Right now are 163rd in the country for rebounds.
Yeah.
That's surprising
The turnover numbers are bad, too, aren't they?
Sure.
I think that's pretty bad.
Get Stat Boy on it. But, I don't know. It'll be tough. Who's always play like butt in Blacksburg?
Castle so, Auditorium.
I'm not optimistic.
Oh, I'm not. I picked this as a loss. I'm never optimistic going in there because that place sucks. Yep. Like, it was not. It's 95 degrees. That's where they broke Isaiah last year.
It's going to take a Ty Jerome. I don't give a fuck about you game again.
And he
plays like that. So yeah.
You realize that Tony Bennett coach teams have actually done quite well in Blacksburg, right? I think he's 5-3 down there.
No, I didn't realize it.
No, I knew it was 5-3. The last two and the two before that were like decided by like 3 and 4 points like each.
So yeah, I mean it's an ACC road game. I mean that's kind of how it happens.
But a lot of those games were against Virginia Tech teams that were legitimately awful. This Virginia Tech team is not awful.
Well, then there's also the time that London should have been fouled and they didn't call it and they won on that crap. And then the whole like ball.
Oh, the ball sitting on the back of the rim. Yeah.
So the last two losses, I have asterisk. I've sent in my letter complaints to the office.
Caroline is validating Virginia losses. It's never the team's fault. I'm shocked about
that. I'm just saying, like, those two games were brutal.
I'm just saying that it's always close down there in that even when we're the vastly superior team, sometimes they've still lost or it's been closer than it should. And right now, is UVA the vastly superior team? Rankings wise, sure, but
on paper we should beat them by 15.
Hard to say.
There
15. We don't beat anybody by 15.
I'm sorry, what?
UNC Greensboro. We
won like over like 75% of our non-cons by like 15 or 20 points.
Yeah, but that's because 75% of the non-cons are against legitimately awful teams. That's my whole thesis.
Oh my gosh. Are you gonna go
legitimately
right?
Awful team.
Are you going to go right for, like, Seth Davis? And you can do the whole, like, they never blow anybody out when we were, like, beating ACC teams by an average of, like, 14 points a game.
If we beat the ACC teams by 14 points a game.
We did, like, 2 years ago.
No, I'm talking about this year's team, Parts. That's the whole point. I don't know if this team is
paper,
a great team yet compared to Virginia Tech, which is a good-ish team. A good team.
As much as it pains me to say it, Buzz Williams is a good coach.
He
should find somewhere in Texas.
Is Joe Flacco an elite quarterback? The jury's still out.
I've got Virginia. I've got Tony Bennett 5-3 down in Blacksburg. He lost one by six. He won one by three. He won one by what's that? Two. He won one by 18. No, that was at home. He won one by 16 on the road. He won by 20 down there.
Ooh.
And he
Let's
won
one of that.
Yeah. And then he won one. He had a couple close ones, another close one, and then he lost two in a row. So yeah, I mean it's an ACC road game, y'all.
Yeah. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be tough. I think one of their guys is going to shoot like 70% from three who hasn't taken more than four on the entire season.
Right.
Because that's usually what happens.
Shout out to my talking about Virginia Tech's rebounding, and we rebound fewer per game. But we all know
why,
because of possessions.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Don't use just that because Schwartz will get mad at you.
He'll say it's a silly that you've made a silly remark.
Can't fair rebounding margin.
If you guys could chastise me for things I say or omit and not hypothetically things that I didn't do because I did validate it with X on it, that would be great.
You're playing.
There's plenty in column A to talk about and the shit that comes out of my mouth.
It's just time to be better, Pierce. It's a new year. Just be better.
2018.
Hashtag new year, new me.
Hashtag goals. Hashtag. That's my resolution, to not preface things with hashtag.
That's terrible. Hashtag disagree. That's terrible.
Hashtag LOL.
All right. On that note, hashtag conclusion of the podcast. We'll be back soon to talk about next upcoming games. Virginia Tech Certainly the next one. And then we've got Carolina at home. Breaking news on all fronts, of course, at streakingthelawn.com. Content, hashtag content. But yeah, stay tuned to the blog for game threads, and we'll be back soon. Thanks for listening. Go Hoos.
Hashtag Wahoo Wahoo.